Welcome, dear devotees. How wonderful to be here with you all. Where is our main organizer, Krishna Balaram Prabhu? Ah, we should distribute these. Is that the idea? Aha, okay. So we're not going to be projecting.
We could.
Oh, well.
But we have enough copies.
So. Okay, okay. So, devotees, these verse sheets are being given out right now. We'll explain about them in a minute or two. But first of all, let's just welcome you to our Nectar of Devotion Seminar, UJ 2015. Hari Bol! Nectar of Devotion King.
Yes.
And so the idea is this, devotees. The idea is this, that Nectar of Devotion is divided into four sections. The first section is from the very beginning up to and including chapter 19. So what we are going to do tonight, tomorrow night, and what is it, Thursday night, we are going to briefly, of course, go through these first 19 chapters which make up the first part. Or, you know, because Nectar of Devotion, the original title is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which means the ocean of nectar of devotion, basically. So, Rupa Goswami in the original text, because it's an ocean, Sindhu, he has divided it into four sides of the ocean: east, south, west, and north, right? And the first section from the very beginning to up to and including 19 is the eastern side of the ocean. And it's basically like a general introduction to the whole subject matter. So that's what we're going to be doing. We only have 3 nights of maybe an hour or an hour and a quarter or so each night. So we do have to deal with things a little briefly, but we do feel confident that by the grace of the Lord, maybe we shouldn't say that we feel too confident, but by His mercy, I think we'll be able to briefly go through those chapters in such a way that you'll be able to walk out with at least a general overview type of idea of that eastern side of the ocean. For Bhakti Shastri, this the same section up to and including chapter 19 is studied for Bhakti Shastri. Some of you, I think, have Bhakti Shastri already, so you would have done this, but they do it in much more detail, of course. They spend, I don't know what, like 40 hours or something. We're going to have like 4, 5, 6 hours, something like that. But anyway, the basic idea will be there. And we've given you out these sheets now, these verse sheets. These are verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which appear in Nectar of Devotion in a, you know, not quoted as verses like that, like typically with the Sanskrit or Bengali, then a word for word and translation. This is an interesting and important thing about Nectar of Devotion, that the original text is written in that way, verse by verse by verse That's what it is. But Srila Prabhupada's chosen to do it in a style or a manner which is called a summary study. So everything is there. Every verse is there without exception, but it's sort of molded into the general flow of the prose of the book. You follow the idea. And we'll point out to you here and there how this is such and such a verse. Even tonight, you know, certain verses which you have there on your sheets. And these verses, they most of them appear in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So where they do, as you'll see, I hope, there are references, I hope, there, yeah. So if you want to look them up, you can. Okay, so let us begin. And you know how we'll begin? Well, okay, here's another point. Seeing we're studying Nectar of Devotion, guess what, devotees? It would be an excellent idea to bring along a copy of Nectar of Devotion. And those of you who have, well done. Those of you who haven't, oh well, such is life. But tomorrow night, we will, Lord willing, we will have copies available at a discounted rate. How's that? For our Nectar of Devotion seminar students. And this is not just like, you know, a typical class you get in the temple on Sundays or the different classes we give, morning Bhagavatam classes on some festival day like Radhastami. The idea here is it's meant to be more educational, and so it's also a good idea to have some paper and a pen or some way of recording information. Yeah. So anyway, tomorrow we'll have copies available of Nectar of Devotion, and if you have one at home but somehow you just didn't bring it this evening, please do bring it tomorrow, because it will help, because we will be pointing certain things out that on this page or in this paragraph such and such is stated. Okay, so now to begin, every evening we will chant what is the it's just like the introductory verse. It's there right at the beginning. If you've got your Nectar of Devotion there with you, you'll see it's right there. It's an invocation right in the first few pages. See, I think it's before then. Yeah, there it is, right there. There are different versions of Nectar of Devotion, of course, but in many of them, you'll find a page right at the beginning. At the top, there's a picture of the six Goswamis, and then there's this verse, which is an invocation. And I'll chant it. If you've got it there, we can do it responsibly, line by line, okay? Nana shastra vicharanai kanipano sadharma samstapako.
Nana shastra vicharanai
kanipano. Lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo.
Lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo.
Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko.
Radha Krishna
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghurya Go Sri Jiva Gopalako
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghurya Go Sri Jiva Gopalako
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghurya Go Sri Jiva Gopalako
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghurya Go
So I'll read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis, and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Sri Sad Goswami Prabhu ki. So Nectar of Devotion, the original text is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami, who is the leader basically of the six Goswamis. So let's start going through the book. We'll begin in the preface. The preface is by Srila Prabhupada. In other words, it is not exactly part of the original text. It's Srila Prabhupada expressing himself and explaining some very important points. We can just note a couple of the points. Let us see. Preface. Where is it? Oh, Krishna. Yes, okay. It is now 6th paragraph. How's that? 6th paragraph in the preface. Let's just read a little bit about it, a little bit from here. That every bhakti means devotional service. Every service has some attractive feature which drives the servitor progressively on and on. Every one of us within this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service, and the impetus for such service is the pleasure we derive from it. Driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night, isn't it? A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family, and a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. The force which drives the philanthropist, the householder, and nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow relationship whose taste is very sweet. Bhakti rasa is a mellow, different from the ordinary rasa enjoyed by mundane workers. Yeah, mundane workers labor very hard day and night in order to relish the same kind of rasa, which is understood as sense gratification. So this is the basic idea, that in contrast to the rasa which is there in material life, the rasa of bhakti is something different. It's higher, a higher stage of experience. And let's see here. I think it's the next paragraph, am I right? Yes, it is. The next paragraph, bhakti rasa. Prabhupada's talked about sense gratification and material tastes, they don't last. Bhakti rasa, however, the mellow relished in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, does not finish with the end of life. It continues perpetually and is therefore called amrita, that which does not die but exists eternally. So what is Nectar of Devotion then? Nectar of Devotion is a book which is studying bhakti rasa, that taste, that wonderful taste which is there in devotional service. Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada would say, is something like a handbook for devotees. You don't find so much, like in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, you find a lot of discussion about what's wrong with material life, what's wrong with being a materialist. Nectar of Devotion is not really dealing with that sort of subject so much, but is explaining all about the different elements that make up the process of bhakti, the process of devotional service, and the different tastes and experiences which are there in bhakti rasa, the mellow, the taste of devotional service. So that's the idea of the preface in a nutshell, rather, perhaps a rather small nutshell, but that's it. Let's move on to the introduction. Now the introduction, this is now part of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yeah. Here, there are 12, the first 12 paragraphs. We can look at them briefly. Each one of these paragraphs is a paraphrasing of a particular verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. A particular verse which appears in the section, which is really like, part of it is the Mangala Charana. Mangala Charana means prayers which are presented for invoking auspiciousness, for giving blessings, for praying for mercy. There are different functions of a Mangala Charana. So, a number of these verses, they're either like stating what the book's about, or offering benedictions to the readers, or even asking for blessings from different people like the Lord, like the spiritual master. So let's just go through the introduction, at least the first so many paragraphs. So there we see now, invoking auspiciousness. This is a paraphrasing of a verse, which I don't think, did I give it to you? Akila Rasamrita Murti. Is that there? It would be the first one if it was. Oh dear. Okay. Anyway, I'll just read that verse and the translation. Kila Rasamrita Murti Prasrimara Ruchi Ruda Taraka Pali Kalita Shama Lalita Radha Prayan Vidur Jayati. This is, make a note if you want to look it up, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela 8:142. And this verse, the first verse in the Mangala Charana, is defining the subject matter of the book. And the translation is, let Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be glorified. By virtue of his expanding attractive features, he subjugated the gopis named Taraka and Pali and absorbed the minds of Shama and Lalita. He is the most attractive lover of Srimati Radharani and is the reservoir of pleasure for devotees in all all devotional mellows. So what is this book about? Well, we mentioned it's about the mellows of devotional service. Prabhupada talks about that in the preface, the tastes of devotional service. But all in the context of Krishna. Krishna, who is so wonderful and so attractive. So this first verse then is discussing Krishna. Second paragraph is offering obeisances. Rupa Goswami offers obeisances to Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada, in the second paragraph, he offers his obeisances to Rupa Goswami and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Then the third paragraph is the third verse. And as you see there, Prabhupada says, in that third verse in the Mangala Charana, Rupa Goswami is offering obeisances to Sanatan Goswami, who is also his spiritual master. Yeah. And he prays for mercy. May this attempt to write this book be successful. Then the fourth paragraph is the paraphrasing of the fourth verse. And it's an interesting idea is expressed. It's a verse which is offering obeisances again. You know, he's been offering obeisances to different people. Now he's offering obeisances to all the great devotees who are like sharks in the ocean of nectar of devotion. I hope you have not encountered a live shark in the sea. In my surfing days, I encountered two, actually. Shoo, that was a bit touchy. So offering obeisances to the great devotees who are like sharks. You know, they're like sharks for different reasons. They're like sharks because sharks live only in the ocean. They don't live in the rivers, generally. They live only in the ocean. The way he puts it there, if you look at that paragraph, that the sharks or the great devotees don't care for the various rivers of liberation. The impersonalists, they are more attracted to the rivers, different speculative processes of coming to the ocean being liberation or perfection. But the great devotees, they're always in the ocean. So they don't care about the rivers. Then the sharks, what now? The sharks only live in the ocean, they reject the rivers, and the sharks are never caught in the fisherman's net. Yeah. In other words, they never get entangled in Maya. Those are just some ideas that come out of that. The fourth paragraph. Then, in the fifth paragraph is the paraphrasing of the fifth verse. And Rupa Goswami is praying for the protection of Nectar of Devotion from, you know, the mental speculators, people like that. People who may come along and take a book like Nectar of Devotion or Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam and start speculating on it that, you know, surrender to Krishna doesn't mean, when Krishna says surrender to me, he doesn't mean surrender to me. He means surrender unto the unborn eternal within me, or something along those lines. So Rupa Goswami is praying for protection from these people and their ideas, and he compares their arguments, their attempts to disturb the whole devotional, the whole devotional situation. He compares it to volcanic eruptions in the middle of the ocean. But the good news is, a volcanic eruption in the middle of an ocean can't really do much, because, you know, the ocean is just too vast. But still, he's praying for protection. That's the fifth one. Then the sixth one is the next paragraph. It's a very nice one, and it's kind of relevant to us. He is, Prabhupada says, the author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Srila Rupa Goswami very humbly submits that he's just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this work. That should be the attitude of all preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think of ourselves as great preachers. Yeah. So this is very nice. This is something very relevant to us, and that is the paraphrasing of the sixth verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Then he goes on. Let's see. The next two paragraphs, he starts talking about how Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, is divided up into different sections. Let's just have a little look at this. He mentions, as we said earlier, in this the seventh paragraph, originally the ocean is divided, like the watery ocean, into east, south, west, and north, those four sides. Within each side, there are different waves. Now, we are studying here the eastern side. Let us just now tell you, what are the waves? What are the waves in the eastern side? Are you ready? Okay, devotees, what does he say here? That in the first part, the eastern part, there are four waves. So now, first is a general description of devotional service. This is in Nectar of Devotion. It is from the next paragraph, would you believe? It's, what is it now? It would be the ninth paragraph. The immediate following paragraph, the eighth paragraph. From that point on, It is a general introduction, which is from the 9th paragraph of the introduction on until the end of chapter 1. That is the first of these, the four waves in the eastern side of the ocean. The second, Prabhupada says here, the second wave concerns the regulative principles for executing devotional service. This is now the section on sadhana bhakti. It begins with chapter 2 and it concludes with chapter 16. And, you know, I don't want to complicate things, but there are three subsections within that second wave regarding the regulative principles. Sadhana Bhakti. First of all, there's an introduction to Sadhana Bhakti, which is chapter 2 to chapter 5. Then second subsection is the discussion of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Means the practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations. And then the third part of the second wave is chapters 15 and 16, which are discussing Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, which means the practice of spontaneous devotional service. I hope I haven't confused any of you now by going into too much detail. But that those are three subsections, sub-waves, of the second wave of the eastern part. Then the third, what does Prabhupada say? The third wave is about devotional service and ecstasy. That is chapters 17 and 18, which are about bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti, chapters 17 and 18. And then the fourth wave of the eastern side, which is the last part we're going to be looking at, is about Prema Bhakti. Just a very simple little introduction to Prema Bhakti. And that's chapter 19. And sometimes devotees ask, you know, Prema Bhakti, that's what it's all about. It's just the topmost thing. Why only one chapter? Why only one chapter? Good question. Do you know why? Because the entirety of the rest of the book is about Prema Bhakti. Yeah. Yeah. And that chapter 19 is just a little sort of icebreaker just to give a very basic idea of what is Prema Bhakti. Okay. So now, devotees, we move on to the next paragraph. And if I haven't got lost in the paragraphs, is it? Anyway, it is the paragraph beginning the authorized descriptions of bhakti. Can you see it?
Yes.
It should be something like the 8th or 9th or something. Depends which version of the book you see. Are you with me? Those of you who have access. Okay, now this is where we come to the first verse, which we've given you on your verse sheets. Right, so the authorized descriptions of bhakti or devotional service following in the footsteps of previous acharyas can be summarized in the following statement by Srila Rupa Goswami. First class devotional service is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. This is a paraphrasing of the first verse there. You got your verse sheets, right? Have a look at that. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. This is a definition of pure devotional service. What is it? What does it look like? How could you recognize it in a person? Yeah, this is it here. This is the definition of pure devotional service. So, you know, seeing the book is all about the nectar of devotion and how wonderful bhakti rasa is and how ecstatic it is and how it's focused on Krishna and how wonderful Krishna is. And seeing the book, Nectar of Devotion, as Prabhupada said, is something like a handbook of about devotional service. This verse is extremely important. It's extremely important. It is like, you could say, the definitive verse in the book in terms of how to achieve that nectar of devotion. How to achieve that. And how you can come to the point where you can experience that. What you got to do? You've got to practice pure devotional, or you've got to develop pure devotional service. So in a sense, Nectar of Devotion is just explaining how to achieve that state, which is the state described in that verse, and it's also describing how wonderful it is when you do achieve it. Now we have to have a closer look at this verse, devotees. Yes, this verse, it has four lines. The first two lines are like one part. The second two lines are another part. The first two lines are explaining what are the things you must not do if you want to perform pure devotional service. You must not... Haribol. Haribol, Haribol. Thank you. Did I switch it off? Is that what I did? The light's gone red. Okay, so the first two lines are mentioning four things which you must not do if you want your activity, your life, to be one of pure devotional service. And the last two lines, line three and line four, are explaining the things you must do. Three things you must do if you want to render pure devotional service. Yes, so this is very important. Let's have a look, okay, thank you, at the verse. First two lines. Incidentally, the things that you're meant not to do. Oh, look at that. Wow, I can't believe it. We have four copies of Nectar of Devotion. For if anyone would like. How much are they?
75 rand each.
75 rand? It'd be cheaper at twice the price. And there'll be more tomorrow. And this is the latest version. There's some important changes in some of the later chapters we'll be looking at. Okay, right. So the four things you're meant to not do, they are called, technically in Sanskrit, tatastha lakshana. Tatastha, spelt T-A-T-A-S-T-H-A. Tatastha lakshana. Tatastha means marginal. Yeah. Like, we are jivas, we are called tatastha shakti, marginal potency of the Lord. And lakshana means quality, marginal qualities. Yeah, they're not as important, the four negative things, the tatastha lakshana, they're not as important as the three things that must be there, which are called the swaroop. Lakshana, swaroop, as in swaroop, dhamada, swaroop, lakshana, swaroop means essential. But the verse begins, it begins with the four negative ones, so let's have a look at them. Actually what we'll do, we'll look at the second line first, jnana karma, karmadi. Anavritam. Karma. You are not meant to do any karma. No karma. What does karma mean in this context? It means no materialistic religion. It doesn't mean just like ordinary, just gross material activity. It means like no worshipping the demigods, for example, that sort of thing. No carrying kavadi. Okay? You don't carry cavity, all right. Thank you. No fire walking also. All right. That's considered karma in this context. Materialistic religion. No jnana. Sorry, I should have started with jnana. Jnana karma adi anavritam. Jnana. In this context, jnana of course literally means knowledge, but in this context it means impersonal knowledge. Impersonal speculation. None of that. If you want to do pure devotional service, no mental speculation, particularly impersonal. Then no karma we mentioned, no materialistic, ritualistic type activity. Then adi. Adi, interesting little word. It means other kind of, you know, religious or quasi-religious activities which are not in the line of devotional service, like austerities, for example, like yogic exercises. You know, these are sort of spiritual type things. You find them in the Vedas. But in and of themselves, they're not helpful in devotional service. So none of these other, they're kind of like peripheral spiritual or quasi-spiritual activities. So no just dry renunciation, no mystical powers, if any of you have any interest in such things. Yeah. I mean, not that you can't do physical exercises like hatha yoga just for health. You know, Prabhupada would walk every day just for health. So, no, you can do some yogic exercises just for health, but not in the sense that I am doing this to enhance my Krishna consciousness. First of all, I will do breathing exercises for 15 minutes, then I will chant my rounds better by the mercy of the breathing exercises. And then, sorry to jump around a little here, back to the first line, anyabhilashita shunyam means, anya means other or any other. So just no other material desire. This is now including just general material things. Just, you know, like intoxication and all these types of things. No, just general, any other type of materialistic activity, which is not part of either jnana or karma or adi. Yeah. But just sort of no general materialism, you could say. Anya abhilash. Anya means other. Abhilash means desire. And shunya means zero in Sanskrit, and I believe in Hindi too. Yeah. And you know, mora a abhilas vilas kunje dio vas. I've overpowered this thing. Mora a, my a means only abhilas, desire. Yeah. Vilas kunje dio vas. Anyway, okay. So those are four negative things, considerations, four things which must not be there. And then there are three in the oh, Haribo. Is it going to work?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. In line three and line four, there are three positive things which must be there. Must, absolutely must. If your activity is to be pure devotional service. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. Bhaktir Uttama. Uttama means pure, basically. Uttama, beyond ignorance. So, first of all, the first term to look at is Krishna. First thing. Krishna means your activity has to be for Krishna if it is to be pure devotional service. You cannot do pure devotional service to Durga, Shiva, you know, the demigods. There's no such thing. You cannot do pure devotional service for your country, your family. If your activity is to be pure devotional service, it must be for Krishna. But Krishna includes his expansions, of course. You know, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Balaram, Lord Ramachandra, and so on and so forth. I'm just going to shout. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really help that much. Yeah, so Krishna must be for Krishna, including his expansions, and including his devotees. Yes. If you serve, for example, the spiritual master, or just any sincere devotee, if you render service to them in some way or another, this is devotional service. Or it may be pure devotional service. So that's the first thing that has to be there. Second thing is, let's see now, Anukulyena Krishnanu. Anukulya, this is interesting. Anukul means favorable. Favorable. There are two sort of aspects to favorability. One is, it must be, or your attitude must be favorable to Krishna. Yes. In other words, you know, we jokingly, you know what we like, we tend to joke around a bit. Jokingly, we sometimes say that, You know, the Sunday feast, Sunday program has finished. Everyone's gone home. Somehow you got late speaking to someone, and you're just about the last one to leave, and you're on your way out the door. It's 8 o'clock or something, or even later. And the temple president says, "Ah, we have a wonderful service opportunity for you. You can. We need someone to wash the pots. Don't worry, there's only 30 of them." "And don't worry, we ran out of hot water, so you won't have to worry about sense gratification." So anyway, you know, sometimes you get sort of roped into, by material standards, you could say, you got roped into something just when you really didn't want to do it, but you just got dragged into doing something. So now you may be washing the pots or whatever it may be, and you are thinking, you know, why me? This sort of idea. You know, this temple president, who is he? And Krishna, come on, Krishna. You know, I've got important things to do, Krishna. Why you force me to do this? This is not a favorable attitude. If your activity of washing the pots is to actually be pure devotional service, your attitude has to be favorable. That you're doing it for Krishna, and you know, you're really into trying to do it to please the Lord. And doing your best. Then your activity may be pure devotional service. If you're doing it reluctantly with some negative attitude, it may be a type of devotional service, but it's not pure. Then there's a second aspect to favorability. You should note these things down. They're really important. That is, it has to actually please Krishna. In other words, you may do something for Krishna, at least you know, as far as you're concerned, it's for Krishna. And even you may do it with a nice attitude. But it may actually not please Krishna. You know, I mean, this is maybe taking it too far, but someone buys a burger at McDonald's and with a very devotional mood, they think, "Krishna, I'm offering this to you." But it won't please Krishna. It won't please Krishna. Doesn't matter how devotional your attitude is, it won't please Krishna. Or, well, Giriraj Maharaj mentions an interesting example, experience that he had in his earlier days preaching in India. They met one man who was really nice. Really nice business person. And before they even asked him, would you like to become a life member? He asked, "Can I become a life member?" And before they told him how much it is, he said, "Is it okay if I give like twice the amount that it is?" In other words, his attitude was really favorable. And then they sat down there talking, and his secretary brought in a cup of tea, and it was not rooibos. And the man pulled out a little silver sort of little casket, this decorative little ornate thing from his drawer. In it was tulsi, just full of tulsi. And he put the tulsi in his tea. And it wasn't rooibos tea. And he told the devotees, "You know, I love Krishna so much. Whenever I have a cup of tea, I always put tulsi in." So you get the idea. The attitude is very favorable, but it's actually not pleasing to Krishna. It's displeasing to Krishna. So these are the two aspects of favorability. And then the third one is anushilanam. Anushilanam means ongoing, unbroken cultivation, uninterrupted. This is the idea. Anushilanam. Uninterrupted. That it's not like, okay, we do some devotional service, then we do some material activity, then we do some devotional service. You know, the famous one is that I must finish my rounds, but my favorite program is coming on television. So, you know, I'll leave my rounds till afterwards. That's an interruption, you see, of your devotional activity. Or you may try to take it to a more advanced level, that I will watch my favorite program while chanting my rounds. So this is not pure devotional service. So let's just go very quickly back over those, the different elements in the picture there. On the negative side, things that must not be there if you're hoping to perform pure devotional service. No jnana, mental speculation and personal ideas. No karma, no materialistic religious activities. No adi means like peripheral, more peripheral types of religious kind of Vedic marginal type activities. Those three. And then anya abhilash, any other desire must be zero. Any other must be zero. Means just anything else. You know, particularly just gross material ideas. But just anything else, that's what it means. Anya abhilash, any other desire. And then on the positive side, must be for Krishna or his expansions or devotees. Must be done favorably, favorable attitude, but it must actually be pleasing to Krishna. And it should be an ongoing, unbroken activity. Then you could say that this person is rendering pure devotional service. And actually, the rest of this whole introduction is basically a purport to that verse. Yeah. And we're not going to go through the whole thing, but that's what it is. The rest of the whole chapter is just an explanation, basically explaining what I just said. Except there is one more verse. Yes, it is on your verse sheets. Am I right? What's it? Sarvapadi Vinir Muktan. There it is. It's the second verse on your verse sheets. And it is discussed in the second to last paragraph of the introduction. Yeah. Rupa Goswami has quoted a definition from Narada Pancharatra as follows. One should be freed from all material designations and by Krishna consciousness must be cleansed of all material contamination. So Prabhupada is referring to this verse, which is on your verse sheet's second verse. Let's now go on to chapter 1. And remember, please remember, devotees, this we are now in the first wave. The first wave of the four waves of the eastern side of the ocean. This is discussing the characteristics of pure devotional service. And I think I may have given you the... did I give you the verse? Kleshagni Shubhada Moksha Lagukrit Sudulabha Sandran Nanda Visheshatma Sri Krishna Karshani Chasat. Okay, so Prabhupada lists them out there. six characteristics of pure devotional service, brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress, the beginning of all auspiciousness, automatically puts you in transcendental pleasure, is rarely achieved. When you are in pure devotional service, it's so wonderful that you think that any idea of liberation is like crazy. It's ridiculous. So such a devotee just derides even the idea of liberation. And then sixth is it's the only way to attract Krishna. Let's briefly say a few words about each one. Prabhupada, in regard to relief from material distress, let's see, where is it? Where are we? Okay. If you go down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the sixth paragraph. Are you with me? It is stated in the Padma Purana. You got that? It is stated in the Padma Purana. There are four kinds of effects due to sinful activities, which are listed as follows. The effect which is not yet fructified, the effect which is lying as seed, the effect which is already mature, and the effect which is almost mature. You know, I'm sure it was not Srila Prabhupada, I think it was just our editors, kind of got them a little bit around the wrong way. It should read, it should be the effect which is lying as seed, then the effect which is not yet fructified, the effect which is almost mature, and the effect which is already actually mature. You get the idea? So the point is this. We're talking about material distress or relief from material distress, but this is analyzing what is material distress. And what is it? It's your karma. It is your karma. That's what it is. Yeah. So, the idea is, first of all, you do something wrong, and the karma, it goes into your heart, you could say. It's there as a seed, but it's just totally non-functional. It's not functioning at all. And then next stage, it's sort of, you know, it starts coming a little bit. And then the next stage, it's coming quite strongly. The reaction is coming. I mean, you can really feel something is going wrong. And then the last stage is the reaction is just on you. An example which can be given to illustrate the principle is if you get a disease, like say malaria, but it could be any disease probably. You know, first of all, like with malaria at least, the mosquito bites you. And, you know, Hare Krishna, I've not had malaria yet. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. But I know some devotees who have. Wow. Yeah. For the first couple of weeks, you are normal. You're just normal. Life is normal. There are literally no symptoms whatsoever. But then after, you know, whatever it is, two or three weeks or something, you start to feel something, like a bit of a headache. And you think, wow, I've got a bit of a headache. Okay, better take a Disprin or something like that. So the first couple of weeks, it's like the stage, in terms of karma, where it's just as a seed. There's actually no manifest effect whatsoever. And then the second stage, it's like a hint. You can tell something's wrong, but it doesn't seem to be serious. When the third stage, you realize you've got malaria. You're really sick. I mean, you're starting to get really sick. And then the fourth stage is you are just finished. You're bedridden and you cannot move. There are Sanskrit terms for these four stages. If you like, you could write them down. Anyway, first, where it's completely unmanifest, is called aprarabdha. How's that? How's that? Aprarabdha. A-P-R-A. R-A-B-D-H-A. Aprarabdha. Prarabdha means manifest. Aprarabdha means just not manifest. Next is kutam. Next is bija. And next is prarabdha. So the thing is, did you get that? Yeah? Aprarabdha, kuta, bija, prarabdha. The point is that pure devotional service, even on a beginning stage, not like, exalted devotee stage, but just a beginning stage where you're being careful. No jnana, no karma, and none of these other things. And you're really focused on Krishna, trying to do everything favorably and not getting into other things, getting distracted. It means you can be a neophyte devotee, but basically rendering pure devotional service. Yeah. So the point here is that pure devotional service, even for a beginner, will give so much relief from the anxieties and distresses of material life. It's amazing. And you may have experienced it yourself. I know I did. When I first joined, I had many anxieties. Would you believe it? I was living in an ocean of anxiety of different sorts. After about a week living in the temple, suddenly one day I realized, wow, I've got nothing to worry about because I'm not this body. Wow, that's great. What a sense of relief. It was amazing. And then the second one is like a parallel, that pure devotional service is all auspicious. It's not only do you become free from distress, but actually things become good. Yeah, many good things. And, we haven't got time to read through the whole section, but basically, Prabhupada says that if something is to be all auspicious, it must have three characteristics. Listen to this, devotees. This is just from out of what Prabhupada said. One, it must benefit everyone, not just some, but everyone. Two, it must attract everyone. And three, it must produce good qualities. Did you get that? Yeah? Must benefit everyone. Must attract everyone. Must produce good qualities. And like I say, we can't go through all the details, but Prabhupada gives the example of the United Nations failing to benefit everyone, although the idea is it's meant to benefit everyone. But, I think it goes without saying, everyone's well aware, it's just not benefiting everyone. It's a hard road out there in material life. So, But Krishna consciousness does benefit everyone. And we could give the example of when, I mean, there's so many examples, but when we offer food, it's good for us. It's prasadam, no karma, very nice. But someone could say, well, it's bad for the vegetables because they got killed. But it's good for the vegetables. Also, they got offered to Krishna. At least they'll get human births. Maybe they'll go back to Godhead. Prabhupada actually says that in one place I read. That, you know, your, what was it tonight? Alu mata, was it? No, alu gobi. Alu gobi. When you go back to Goloka Vrindavan, devotees, when you go back, Hare Krishna, in the not too distant future, Hare Krishna, then as you're entering, you may meet a devotee and he or she may say, oh, you remember me. I was that alu that you ate at the Nectar of Devotion seminar at UJ. Welcome to Golok Vrindavan. And I'm actually serious. Really. It may happen. Because this may happen to food which is offered to the Lord. Then it can, attract everyone. Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Chaitanya going through the Jarakanda forest, attracted the animals, just, you know, on an amazing scale. And what was the other one? It produces good qualities, yeah. Prabhupada gives the example of young people going to university, non-devotees, and they just get degraded. But young people become Krishna conscious and they become really wonderful people. Then next one is, it immediately puts one in transcendental happiness. And Prabhupada discusses, what is it now? Three types of happiness. Material happiness, impersonal happiness, happiness from devotional service. Yeah. And in regards to material, sense gratification, material happiness, he talks about mystic perfections. Anyway, those things, the point is, devotional service gives much higher happiness than these things. Then number four is, it's really achieved. Prabhupada gives two reasons why pure devotional service is rarely achieved. One, because you cannot attain it by your own efforts. You cannot do DIY. You know what that means? Do it yourself. You know, pure devotional service. Mercy has to be there. It really has to be there. So that's the first reason why it is rarely achieved, because you can't achieve it by your own efforts. And second reason is, Krishna is not anxious to give it quickly unless he feels convinced that this person, because, you know, if Krishna gives you pure devotional service, means basically he is giving you himself. Yes. In due course, you will be able to control him. Yeah. Through pure devotional service. And therefore, Krishna is, you know, he's very careful about who he gives pure devotional service. Therefore, it's really achieved. And number five, what is it now? Oh yes, you deride liberation. And Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami says that if Brahmananda, The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme is multiplied by 1 trillionfold. It still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. And we could just mention that somewhere else, I forget exactly where, Prabhupada says that the happiness of material sense gratification compared to the happiness of impersonal liberation is like the amount of water in the hoof print of a calf compared to an ocean. The happiness of material sense gratification is so small, but the happiness of impersonal liberation is so vast. But here, the happiness of impersonal liberation is 1 trillionth of the happiness of pure devotional service. So, you know, even though, in other words, devotees, even though we get great happiness out of our devotional service, but the good news is there's a lot more to come. There's really a lot more happiness to come. And then the last characteristic is it attracts even Krishna. And if I remember correctly, that well, Prabhupada talks about Radharani and Radharani, who's the embodiment of devotional service. The symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Radharani. Krishna's called Madan Mohan, which means he's so attractive, he can defeat the attraction of thousands of cupids. But Radharani is still more attractive, for she can even attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call her Madan Mohan Mohini, the attractor of Cupid. So, you know, she is so attractive. Why? Not just because she looks nice, although she does look nice, but that's not the point. The point is, she has so much love. Her devotional service is so pure that she attracts Krishna to the point he completely loses control and completely becomes overwhelmed. Therefore, pure devotional service is the only way to attract Krishna. And let's go on to chapter 2. Now we're going into the section about sadhana bhakti. It's the second of the 4 waves. So let's see here. Here we are. Well, interesting little point. If you look at the first paragraph in chapter 2, it says, generally it's understood that in the category of devotional service and practice, there are 2 different qualities. Devotional service and ecstasy has 4, and devotional service and pure love of God has 6 qualities. What does this mean? Out of the 6, it's talking about the 6. From the previous chapter. Yeah. The first 2 characteristics, they are present in sadhana bhakti. Do you get the idea? Right. So then, there's the discussion, because now, from this chapter 2 till the end of chapter 16, we're discussing sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice. Practice, the practice of devotional service. In this context, practice means we're not expert, we're learning, we're trying, sort of trying to come to grips with it, get it together. This is the idea of practice of devotional service. Imperfect, you're learning how to render devotional service. So, let's see. The second paragraph, am I right? Is it really? Oh, well, anyway. It's more actually, the fifth paragraph is a paraphrasing of the next verse. The next verse on your sheet. Where's your sheet? The next verse is on the next page, just over the page. Definition of sadhana bhakti. Kritisaja bhavitsadya bhavasa sadhana bida nityasidasya bhavasya prakatyam hridisajyata. The actual translation is, when transcendental devotional service by which love for Krishna is attained is executed by the senses, it is called sadhana bhakti, or the regulative discharge of devotional service. Such devotion eternally exists within the heart of every living entity. The awakening of this eternal devotion is the potentiality of devotional service in practice. So, in the same paragraph which we just mentioned, Prabhupada gives an example to illustrate the point. It may sound a little confusing, just the English, that the awakening of this eternal devotion is the potentiality of devotional service and practice. In other words, sadhana bhakti can work. Sadhana bhakti can help you progress because you have devotion within you. Yeah. That's what it means. That's the potential. The possibility of progressing in devotional service exists only because bhakti is already there within the heart. Yeah. If it was just something foreign, which now you're just meant to sort of cram in and just learn and just do it somehow, it wouldn't work. And Prabhupada gives an example in the same paragraph. What example does he give? Of a child learning how to walk. It is just part of the human condition to walk. Every child walks. Unless they have some serious disability, just 100% of all the children, after some time, they start standing up, they start walking, and they fall down, and then they stand up, and after a while they can walk. And that's just part of the human condition. So we can become Krishna conscious through practice because Krishna consciousness is there already. If it was not there, it wouldn't be really possible. And an example that we give sometimes to illustrate this point, that if it wasn't there already anyway, that you couldn't really develop it, the example which we give sometimes is flying. It's part of the human condition to walk. It is not part of the human condition to fly. And, even if you practice different techniques, hold your hands in different ways, like artificial wings, which actually people have done. Oh, yeah. You should read about the history of flight, It's really something. Before the Wright brothers, before them, there were people jumping off buildings like this. Oh, yeah. And just getting smashed. So the thing is that it is not part of the human condition to fly. And therefore, you can practice as much as you like. But after 20 years of practice, you know, for a few hours a day, every day, you will not be able to fly any better than on the first day. Because it is just not part of the human condition. Therefore, you know, therefore there's no potentiality. But the fact that Krishna consciousness is there within the heart as just part of who we are, what we are, as eternal spirit souls. Therefore, when we practice devotional service, we can become devotees and make progress and so on like that. So that's a very important point that Prabhupada makes there. Then, going down a little further, let's see. Wow. Next paragraph. What now? Okay. If you go down a few more paragraphs, how's that? You see, there's a paragraph which starts Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see that?
Yes.
Got it? It's not that one. But it is the next one. Okay? It is the next one. So in the next one, Prabhupada says, now the sadhana bhakti or practice of devotional service may also be divided into two parts. The first part is called service according to regulative principles. One has to follow these different regulative principles by the order of the spiritual master on the strength of authoritative scriptures. And I think we've given the verse, is it? It's the next verse. Look at that. Is it? No, wait a minute. Yeah, it's the next verse. Chapter 2, definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Right, we're just getting to there. Well, actually, the definition comes in the next paragraph. Yeah, the definition comes in the next paragraph. So anyway, there's the practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations. You must do this, you can't do that. Then there's the practice, there's another type of practice, a different type of practice, which is called Raganuga. Yeah, it's mentioned there in this same paragraph. Prabhupada says, it refers to the point at which, by following the regulative principles, one becomes a little more attached to Krishna and executes devotional service out of natural love. We will be discussing Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti maybe tomorrow, if not the day after. You know, it's quite a subject. And what the way Prabhupada has put it there, it's just in a very, very simple way that you just, you know, initially, the way Prabhupada talks about it in the same paragraph, that initially you have to get up early in the morning, you're not so keen on it. Did any of you ever experience that? Once or twice? But then you know, wait a minute, Prabhupada said. I told you the story, didn't I? My first experiences, I didn't want to get up, but they told me, Prabhu, Prabhupada said, you must get up early. Oh, okay. So I sort of dragged myself up, and we may even sometimes have to drag ourselves up after 10 years or even more. But the idea of Raganuga, spontaneous, the practice of spontaneous devotional service, Prabhupada mentions here, is that after a little while, you make some progress, and then you like doing it. And then you're thinking, you know, oh, my alarm went off, wonderful, now I can get up. I don't have to sleep any longer in Tamagun. I can get up and do some service. How nice. This is how Prabhupada's putting it here. And it's a very, very simple type of presentation of what spontaneous devotional service may be. But, you know, it's part of it. It's part of it. Whereas Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which is now the next paragraph, and again, it's the same verse on the second page there, the definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. When there's no attachment or no spontaneous loving service to the Lord, and one is engaged in the service of the Lord simply out of obedience to the order of the spiritual master, or in pursuance of the scriptures, such obligatory service is called Vaidhi Bhakti. Now, devotees, we're going to have to, wind up shortly. Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is going to be discussed in chapters 15 and 16. From this point, right, this very point here, where we're at in this chapter now, now is beginning the detailed discussion of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Yeah. And we'll get into that tomorrow, but, you know, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the basic idea is there are rules, regulations, the spiritual master says you must do this, okay, so we do it. Scripture says you must not do that, okay, we won't do it. This is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti in principle. In chapter 6, tomorrow we will focus on chapter 6 and the following chapters to some degree. Chapter 6, as such, is the list of all the rules. All the rules that make up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Yeah. So we're just entering into it right now by seeing that definition that there's no, it may not really be any attachment or spontaneous attraction. We're just doing it out of obedience. This is all Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. The last thing I'll mention tonight from this chapter is it's in the 10th paragraph. Can you find that? It may be difficult, but it's, let's see. Yeah, it starts. Can you see the paragraph in the Padma Purana also? Yeah? Can you? It's the right paragraph. There it is said that one should always remember Lord Vishnu. Yeah. And at the beginning of the next paragraph, we should always try to mold the activities out of our lives in such a way that we'll constantly remember Vishnu or Krishna. It's there, isn't it?
Yes.
Right? Okay. This is now the main rule. This is the main rule. Smartavya satatam Vishnu, vismartavno Najatuchit, sarve vidi nasheda syur, etayor eva kinkara. This is the main rule of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of devotional service according to rules. What is it? You should always remember Krishna and never forget him. Right. And I've mentioned before, I'm sure many of you have heard, in my early days, I was told that you know, I was complaining to one devotee, there's so many rules and do's and do nots, and wow. And he said, look, don't worry about it. There's actually only one rule. Just always remember Krishna and never forget him. There you go. And I thought, oh, that's good. That makes life easier. But the problem is that without following the other rules, you will not be able to follow that rule. Therefore, the verse says, what is it? Sarve vidi, all the rules. Nishedisyor, etayor eva kinkara. Kinkara even means like friend, actually, or servant friend, a servant, but in a, you know, not a servile mood, but in a nice mood, kind of intimate mood like that. All the other rules and regulations are servants of this one. That's what they're there for. They're just there to serve that rule. Yeah. Okay, devotees, there you go. I hope we were not running through things too quickly. So, I don't think we have time for questions, maybe tomorrow. And we'll carry on with chapter 3 tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Nectar of devotion ki.
Jai.
Go Premanandi.
Jai.